and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Mukbil Yabro, filling in for John Tanza here in Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan, Sudan, and the rest of the region this Friday, October 18th, 2024. Lul Ruai, South Sudan People's Defense Forces spokesperson, explains what kicked off the latest clashes in Nasir County.
While they were on their way back to their residence, they were ambushed and the accused was killed along with his bodyguards.
And in Munuki outside Juba, Lawrence Morris says his community wants help to end a dispute over land with the Episcopal Church of Sudan.
We are the people of God which created us, so we can not by force that we want to occupy the area, but we want a peaceful resolution between the church and the community residing here.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The commissioner of South Sudan's Nasir County says office and compound were targeted during recent clashes that have caused 17 deaths. The commissioner and people of Nasir say a new deployment of necessary UI forces will solve the security problem. Mamer Abraham Kwatz reports for VOA from Malakal.
South Sudan's People's Defense Forces and the White Army are accused of being involved in new clashes on Wednesday and Thursday in Upper Nile State's Nasir County. James Galwag, the Nasir County Commissioner, says the clash started when an army general ordered his bodyguards to shoot in the air for no clear reason. He says he narrowly escaped shelling targeting his office and compound.
The second shelling fall into my compound. They fall into my office. They bomb us three times. The fourth bomb fall into my residential area. It seemed like they were also targeting because they knew my office and they also knew my residential area.
He says other troops deployed in Western Nasir came to the compound and aimed to go to his office. But he says the White Army militia marched into town after hearing the shelling and rescued him. Galwag says four civilians were killed, including one woman who was sheltering at his residential area. He also says 13 dead soldiers were discovered in the market yesterday evening. Galwag says more than 20,000 civilians have been displaced to neighboring payams and are sheltering under trees. He says there isn't enough food and there are concerns of possible disease outbreaks. Paul Ruot, former Nasir County Health Director, says 16 civilians were wounded and several children got lost.
The situation is worse now because till now this is the rain season. But the community during the fighting was they are going through water, even the children. Some women, they lost their children. They don't know where they are going. It's a very bad situation during that time.
Ruot says the solution to the clashes is to move the soldiers in Nasir County to another location and bring in replacement troops. Lam Lul is the coordinator for Nasir County's Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, or RRC.
So far as was about the one who started shooting at the civilian. And then when the shooting was started at the Bozu Fish Market, and then the one remained behind started also shooting. It means like they planned to have that act without knowing exactly what the shooter.
Lul Ruai Kong, South Sudan's People's Defense Forces spokesperson, confirmed that 13 soldiers were killed and 7 wounded. He says the clash was not politically motivated. Ruai says a commander discovered his wife was having an affair with a colleague and took the accused colleague to court.
He went to appear before the traditional authority. In fact, the court session went on very well. Deliberations were made and the court was adjourned at around 3 p.m. While they were on their way back to their residence, they were ambushed and the accused was killed along with his bodyguards. That was how the clashes started.
He dismisses allegations that White Army fighters were part of SSPDF forces in Nasir. Ruai says Nasir commissioners and civilians should stop calling for new SSPDF troop deployments.
The second point that I would like to underscore is that the authorities in Nasir, successive commissioners in Nasir, have developed this habit of calling for redeployment of SSPDF forces each time there is a problem. It is not their business to keep on calling for redeployment of every force before they get deployed. The force that we have in Nasir, they were redeployed, I think, less than a year ago.
He adds that the army commander in Nasir County should address why there was shelling in civilian areas, including the commissioner's residence. He also warned civilians against shooting at the army to avoid more clashes. There have been several clashes between the army and civilians. In February, the SSPDF sent a team to Nasir to investigate clashes in the county. For VOA News, I am Amir Abraham Kwad, reporting from Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
Residents of South Sudan's Leer County in Unity State say they are facing hunger. One resident blames the government for not doing enough to address food insecurity. The Transitional Government of National Unity says natural disasters caused food shortages in some parts of the country. For VOA News, Manyang David Mariar reports from Juba.
The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says up to 7.1 million South Sudanese face severe food insecurity this year. Gwet Kong, a resident of Leer County in Unity State, says people in his village are among those suffering acute food insecurity.
People are entirely living on water lily. People are living in a very tough situation in terms of food security. You skip one day for only one meal per day, and if you happen to maybe get something, and then you can maybe have two meals per day. But that one is not regular. It is mostly in the morning, no meal completely, and then in the evening you schedule the little that you have.
Kong says a 50-kilogram bag of sorghum cost about 250,000 South Sudanese pounds, or about $50, and most people in his area can't afford it. Mary Logun lives in Talipayam of Terkega County in central Equatoria State. She says people in her village also are experiencing hunger. She blames the transitional government in Juba for not responding to the needs of residents in remote parts of the country.
I would
like to know what the government is doing. The government is responsible to make sure people have something to eat. The government should not just focus on people in Juba town only and forget the people outside Juba. Right now, we only eat, live, but people in Juba are eating food that the government provided. Children here at the countryside belong to the government as well. Does it mean we are not people of the government there in Juba?
In May, South Sudan's Ministry of Trade launched a subsidized food center that distributes supplies to stores where items are sold at lower prices than in the markets. Albin Akol, South Sudan Humanitarian Affairs Minister, says natural disasters contributed to the shortage of food in the country.
A greater number of people are displaced by the climate change-induced displacement from flooding and drought. For instance, as of October 2024, about 1 million people have been affected. This is the reason that is showing by the current flooding, mostly in Jonglei, Unity State, Upper Nile, Warab, Northern Bargazal, Central Equatoria State, and Abia administrative areas. Of course, the rest are affected, but this is where the majority are affected.
Over the past few years, parts of South Sudan have suffered severe droughts, which kills crops and reduced forage for livestock. Then this year, large parts of the country have been hit by flooding that wiped away tens of thousands of hectares of crops and destroyed homes in many communities. Akol says South Sudan needs the support of international humanitarian agencies to fight food insecurity in the country. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
Residents of Juba suburb have locked horns with the Episcopal Church of Sudan over land after the Supreme Court allowed the eviction of those living on it. The residents say they gave the church land in the Manuki suburb and now the church has turned on them. For VOA News, Dennis Lugongi reports from Juba.
Over more than a decade, rival court cases have brought different rulings in a land dispute between the Episcopal Church of Sudan and the residents of Kanana Island, an area of Monuki. To resolve the issue, the land, about 9.25 hectares, was redemarcated and given to the residents in 2020. However, in August, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the church, allowing it to evict about 300 households. The residents are unhappy. Rhoda Pony is in her 70s and says she started living in the contested area about 20 years ago. Now she's baffled to learn that the church has turned on them.
This church, we are the ones who brought it. We brought it for everyone without segregation. The church said that they will chase us, the owners, away. Can the church compensate us from the beginning until now? Where can we go with our children who were born here, plus our children buried here in this very land? Where can we take our deceased children and to which homeland?
Cecilia Bennett grew up in the neighborhood. She's angry at the church.
The church told us to pray, but now they have become enemies. The church say we should go away from here, yet the people who are fueling this issue in the church are not staying here in our residential area. Most of us, we are born here and grew up here. About 5,000 people, there is nothing like a compensation for us. In South Sudan, we have the government. Let them come to see this issue. I am praying, but I am not going to take whole communion.
Lawrence Morris is the chief of the area. He says the church is being too demanding, even after residents gave it some plots.
In 2020, we demarcated the area. We give 8 plots to the church. After this, the church said still they are not happy with the ruling. They appealed. In the appeal, again, the area was given by the court that it belonged to the church.
A church official in charge of the land held by Episcopal Church of Sudan says he cannot discuss the matter since the case is in court. He refused to give his name. There are 2 Episcopal churches on the land, St. Thomas Parish and St. Stephen Parish. Morris says they have written letters to different government institutions, including the presidency, with no response, but the community is determined to find a solution to the dispute. He says they would like human rights groups to intervene and help resolve the situation.
We are the people of God which created us, so we can not by force that we want to occupy the area, but we want a peaceful resolution between the church and the community residing here.
The matter first went to court in 2012, and there have been several other proceedings on it since then. The community refers to the land as the Block B extension in the Hijazira area. The church, which calls it Kanana Island, says the land was allotted to it in 1987. Land disputes are a major economic and political issue in South Sudan, occasionally leading to violence. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up on South Sudan in Focus, Kenya's President William Ruto moved quickly to name a replacement for Rigathi Gachagua. Stay tuned. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Mukbil Yabaro. Kenya's President William Ruto moved quickly to name a replacement for Rigathi Gachagua, and today he nominated one of his ministers to become his new deputy president, Kithure Kindiki. My colleague Yahyeus Wahib spoke with VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo a little while ago for the latest.
He's been President Ruto's interior minister, basically. So he's been in the cabinet the past 2 years. And I think when we talk about him being the interior minister, it's important to think that he was interior minister while there were a lot of stuff happening in this country. And I'm just going to give you 2 quick examples that, you know, where he came under fire. For example, during the anti-government protest that was spearheaded by the Gen Zs earlier this year, people talked about police brutality. You had a lot of people who passed away and a lot of people who also were injured. And so he was the interior minister during that time. There's also another big thing that Kenya was part of, which is when Kenya basically decided that they were going to send police forces to Haiti. They did manage to do it at the end, but it took a long time, a lot of back and forth a lot of criticism, as to why Kenya was needing to send its police to Haiti while there was a lot of turmoil here in Kenya. But that was something at the time he defended and said this was an international obligation and that, you know, he was handling the local security. Basically, it was not going to be affected. So those are definitely kind of two things to think about because he's been the interior minister.
Exactly. So right now, tell me about the reaction by people to the new nominated interior minister who is supposed to become a deputy president.
Yes, indeed. I think on the street, actually, one person that VOA talked with, talked about the outgoing DP saying that he was too abrasive. He couldn't tone down his language and that he seemed divisive, so that he supports the president's nomination of Kindiki. He said he was somebody who's very calm, who is a worker, and he hopes that he will do a good job supporting the president, the cabinet, and the entire Kenyan society. But, you know, other people we spoke to, did not agree with the, completely disagree with the way the process went, the fact that he was being impeached. Mr. Gachagua, while he was at the hospital, for example, they said this was untimely. Other people said that they voted for a ticket. It was Ruto and Gachagua, and that in the middle of their five-year term, here we are that, one person is no longer part of that ticket. So they also criticized that. So, you have a mix of things about how people feel about this whole process.
That was VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief, Mariama Diallo, speaking with my colleague, Yeheyes Wahib, a short time ago. Mariama let us know that a court blocked Kenya President Ruto's nominee from becoming the new deputy president. There'll be another court hearing next week on the impeachment case. Israeli officials say the country's killing of Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar offers a new chance for a ceasefire deal that would release Israeli hostages still held in Gaza. While on a trip to Germany today, U.S. President Joe Biden said Sinwar's death meant it's time to move forward toward a ceasefire in Gaza, bring the hostages home, and a plan for Gaza's future. Many in the war-battered Gaza are mourning Sinwar today, while some Israelis have celebrated his death. Sinwar was accused of being the mastermind of the October 2023 attack on Israel that killed about 1,200 people and took 250 hostages. Since then, Israeli forces have battered Gaza, leading to about 43,000 deaths. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says that Sinwar's death shows why his government continued the war, which he said is not yet over. The Biden administration has warned Israel that it must increase the amount of humanitarian aid it allows into Gaza within the next 30 days, or it could risk losing access to U.S. weapons funding. Hadar Suskind, president of Americans for Peace Now, told VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shanawi the U.S. should do more.
First of all, we issued a statement when we saw this letter saying that, while we appreciate the letter, we appreciate the sentiment and the fact that the Biden administration is urging the Israeli government to allow aid in, that it frankly is simply not enough. It's not sufficient. There have been previous communications like this in April and otherwise, and we've seen brief increases in aid, including following this letter on Sunday. In the last few days, more trucks have gone into Gaza bearing aid. But again, it's not enough. And it hasn't been consistent. So we believe that the U.S. government should follow its own laws, much less international law, frankly, and demand that the Israelis allow sufficient aid in. That's food, that's water, that's medicine, that's fuel, all of the things that the people of Gaza need for survival purposes. And ultimately, that's a decision of the Israeli government, not the U.S. government. But if the Israeli government is not doing that, then they are in violation of both U.S. and international law. And the United States should follow our own laws, which means no longer supplying offensive weapons to the Israelis, if that is the case.
Humanitarian aid groups fear that Israeli leaders may approve a plan to seal off humanitarian aid to northern Gaza in an attempt to starve out Hamas, which could trap hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who are unwilling or unable to leave their homes without food, water, medicine, and fuel. Would Israel use starvation as a weapon in Gaza?
Well, the plan that many groups and others are responding to, it's a important to note was a plan put out by retired military officials. Neither the government nor the military has endorsed the plan, and they've both said that they do not endorse the plan. That being said, there's no question, it's not a hypothetical. There is rampant hunger in Gaza, and Israel is not allowing sufficient aid in. The important part isn't whether they're following some plan that was proposed or not. It's the reality of what's happening on the ground. And that reality is famine. That reality is widespread hunger. And it doesn't matter whether the government of Israel says they're using it as a weapon of war or not. Those people are hungry. And so they need to change their policy and allow more food in and allow more aid in.
The United States has spent a record of at least $17.9 billion on military aid to Israel since the war in Gaza began. That aid has enabled Israel to purchase billions of dollars worth of munitions it has used in its operations against Hamas in Gaza and then Hezbollah in Lebanon. However, many of those strikes also have killed civilians in both areas. How does Americans for Peace now see a balance between defending Israel and protecting civilian lives?
It's obviously this whole year has been a horrible and very difficult situation. It's been horrible for Israel and Israelis. It's been horrible for Palestinians in Gaza, in the West Bank, now for Lebanese. This year has seen so much death and so much destruction. So what we hope for is an end to that, an end to this war, an end to the violence, an end to the conflict, and hopefully a better future for Israeli and Palestinian people alike. Right now, in the short term, before we get to that, you know, we need to acknowledge that Israel has very legitimate security needs. They were viciously attacked on October 7th by Hamas. Iran has twice now fired hundreds and hundreds of missiles. I mean, thousands of missiles have rained down from Hezbollah in the north. So there are very real, very serious security concerns that Israel has, and that the U.S. supports Israel in defending itself. The challenging part is drawing that line between what is that legitimate and important defense and saying responding to horrible attacks doesn't mean that you can do anything. It doesn't mean that what we have seen in Gaza is okay.
Gun violence victims and gun owners are expressing very different views on how the next occupant of the White House should tackle gun violence in the United States. The Democratic and Republican presidential nominees have made their stances clear on the matter, and voters will soon have their say at the ballot box. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias reports.
Frank Cimarelli's son, Camden, acquired three firearms legally in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, before using one of them to shoot himself in December 2022, dying 5 weeks later. Camden's father became an advocate for more thorough background checks.
The stack of records that he has at the hospital, it's over 6 inches thick. It's over 1,200 pages. And when he bought a gun, nobody looked at it. And it would have said for the last decade he was threatening suicide.
Gun suicides in the United States reached a record high in 2023. 27,300 people took their own lives using a firearm, according to provisional data by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Hoping for tighter gun safety measures, Cimarelli will vote in November for the Democrats, who've made the matter a campaign priority. Wisconsin voter and firearm trainer Eddie Silas understands the need for gun laws, but isn't in favor of stricter ones being imposed.
Criminals, even terrorists, they don't care about gun laws and the enforcement of gun laws. So all it does is restrict our rights as gun owners to be able to protect ourselves and our family.
Stricter gun laws can save lives, says Nick Matuszewski with the nonpartisan Wisconsin anti-violence effort.
We would heavily push for extreme risk laws, a procedure to remove firearms from individuals that are deemed to be threats to themselves or others.
Vice President Kamala Harris, a gun owner herself, promises to pass the so-called red flag laws if elected president.
I am in favor of the Second Amendment, and I believe we need to reinstate the assault weapons ban and pass universal background checks, safe storage laws, and red flag laws.
Former President Donald Trump, who is running for re-election, vows to loosen restrictions and calls into question Harris's stance on guns.
She's always said, we will confiscate all guns. Now she's saying, oh, no, guns, I think they're wonderful, right?
doesn't work that way. They're going to confiscate your guns.
Contrary to Trump's comment, Harris has said she seeks reasonable gun safety measures and is, quote, not trying to take everybody's guns away. Indoor shooting range co-owner Mark Rebholz, an independent voter, sees universal background checks proposed by Harris favorably. But he doesn't think banning assault weapons such as the AR-15 would help curb gun violence.
You can get handguns with 30-round magazines, 33-round magazines, 50-round magazines. So as far as the capacity goes, there's so many other options besides the AR.
Rebholz, who'll vote for Trump in November, believes enforcing the gun laws already in place is the best way forward to prevent more deaths. Nationwide, however, about 6 in 10 U.S. adults say it's too easy to legally obtain a gun, according to surveys conducted last year by the Pew Research Center and Gallup. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
And now for our listener comments brought to you by my colleague Jackson Vunganyi. We begin with a voice recording.
I'm James Ray Majok from Unity State, Bantu Town, South Sudan. I want to pass my condolence message for what has happened from Nigeria, whereby a fuel tanker driver has got a technical on driving a fuel tanker that crashed and killed 140 people, whereby it is a shock news to everyone in Africa. My condolence message to those who lost their beloved one, may their soul rest in peace. Thanks.
Hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus. I'm Daniel Ariak Maiko in Yei Town. The ongoing strike led by water tankers has really jeopardized the lives of the citizens. This strike has significant consequences on the well-being of the citizens. It has an impact on the daily facets of life like healthcare risks, education disruption, market goods rotting, and food insecurity. The government must put the welfare of the citizen and their protection first and take immediate action on the water tanker strike. I'm Thomas Kuntoch in Old Fangak Payam. Jonglei State's Fangak County says World Hunger Day is a very important day for Fangak County population because our agriculture land was submerged with flood water for good 4 years without planted any crops. Fangak County's population depends totally on humanitarian assistance. Amading Malwal Alwang in Juba. These days, the political scene in Juba is incredibly confusing. It is tough to figure out where it all started, what is happening now, and where things might be headed. Everything feels like it's caught up in a swirl of conspiracy and propaganda. It can be really hard to understand why people get hired or fired, and there's just so much uncertainty about who's in control, who is the one calling the shots, and who's just trying to survive. Stephen Mushema in Bidi Settlement tells us the reason perpetrators of rape and forced child marriage go free is because most of the leaders involve themselves in the act. Hence, they feel shameful to report someone who does what they do as people in power. Hello, VOA. I'm Hakim Adinka from Yei. Thanks to Agostino Jadara for visiting our people. You are one of the beloved sons of Central Equatorial State since liberation time and a member of SPLA who implemented the SPLA vision of meeting the people to understand the life of our people in need of humanitarian assistance, security reforms, infrastructure, among others. That is the kind of leadership we need from our leaders. Thanks to Jadara. Good evening, South Sudan in Focus. I'm Jacob Dior Machwang in Rumbek Lake State. I was shocked on Wednesday evening by pessimistic posts and commentaries from many South Sudanese predicting that the country will be in chaos due to the transfer the president made by appointing the long-serving Director General for Internal Security Bureau as the new governor of Warap State. I appeal to General Akol Cook to prove such people wrong and not let him give them a room to say, we knew it, if the country slides back to conflict because of his change.
Thanks, Jackson. And that wraps it up for us this Thursday. This Friday, we invite you to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. For more news, head over to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with a Balanda song. I am your host, Muck Bill Yabro, in Washington. On behalf of our engineer, Keila Williams, and our producer, Kwame Ofori, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Na banga matino inhi. Na
Kapanga. Voice on the wise Equanundini, Napande, Napa voice on the wise Equanundini, Navanga, Vanga in Donga, Vanga in the Navanga. Modi well know we got this in a Biuta, Modi well know we got this in a Sisanio Navanga, Matinoini, Navande.